Let him have it, Chris.
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 Button. Switch for everything.
You're listening to Aaron and Pete on WFMU East Orange and worldwide on the internet at WFMU.org.
What kind of radio show is this?
I heard his voice. Hey, I really put it on.
I'm sick of talking.
I'm about to talk to people.
Might have this man go on the air and deliver a coded message.
Shut up, you're out of your mind.
No, I'm not out of my mind.
Oh, come on. Now, we're going to listen to what he said. Because all we're dealing with here, after all, is talk show time against a man's life. And I don't see that as...
Chris, stand up and wiggle your hips for us.
Oh, I know that guy.
But you're a dull boy.
Yeah, he's a nihilist.
And I'll smash your face for you, dark locals.
Let you start, Dad.
Conversation is a two-way street.
I'm
all right,
you're right
not here.
I don't get your act at all.
I don't think you do either.
Think you know what you're trying to do or how to go about it.
You think you're stupid.
I heard it over the radio.
Real stupid.
I'm not just talking about one person. I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about form. I'm talking about content. I'm talking about interrelationships. I'm talking about God, the devil, hell, heaven. Do you understand? Finally!
And you will not take me off the air for now over any other space time.
I'll pitch my voice wherever I please.
I'm a famous radio person.
About the radio personalities.
I couldn't agree with you more. He's always talking about some radio star that I never heard of.
You don't like my stories? Listen to my program.
Listen to the radio. Find out what's going on. Listen to the talk shows and you will find out what's going on.
Oh, man. Talk radio?
Yes, talk radio.
It's so boring, man. It's hard. It's just really suicide.
I have an idea now.
I just hope this man realizes that being able to communicate with people all over the world carries a serious responsibility.
Show the man your power, baby. Blast him! Give him some of that tone!
It's showtime!
Won't you smile for the kids listening?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience.
Very auspicious beginning.
That we talked about lessons, we had been on Facebook, and Rick, the subject of Rick Nielsen had come up.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's interesting because I had said to you that back in the day, I didn't listen to an awful lot of Cheap Trick. It wasn't like I went out and bought their records. I knew of Cheap Trick. I heard them on the radio.
Yeah.
I loved the whole Fast Times at Ridgemont High thing. And
the charisma of Robin Zander.
Yes.
Your mommy's all right. Your daddy's all right. They just seem a little bit weird. That's the old joke. He says a little bit weird.
Yeah. I like that. Did I just drop my pick? I like that whole thing. But I never really consumed their records, and for that I'm deeply ashamed, and I have no good excuses for you.
I
remember really thinking that Rick Nielsen was a very stylish guy, and I really loved his whole onstage persona, and I loved his whole... You know, the hell? Where the hell did my pick go? I loved the costumes that he would get in. You know, I don't know whether they're called costumes, but you know, the fact that he wanted to look
man,
like
he had a look, man, in a sweater.
Hunts Hall or whatever that guy. You know, the dead end kid.
Well, they're geniuses.
Yes,
they're geniuses because it's like, instead of having four guys where two guys look like rock stars and the other two guys look like awkward rock stars, they went another way, and no other band had that image.
I really liked that, and I really liked, you know, I sampled because I'm, you know, I got that Amazon Music thing. I was able to download quite a few of their albums and just go through them, and they were amazing songwriters. I mean, and he's just a very sophisticated guitar player.
We could say they're amazing They were amazing songwriter.
Because he
pretty much wrote everything.
Really?
Like, there's some contributions from Robin Zander, Tom Peterson, Robin Zander. You know, like on a George Harrison level, like a couple songs per record, a couple ideas that always fit. But Rick Nielsen really basically wrote everything. Like, basically, that's his brainchild.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm even more impressed.
But, yes. Yes, you are.
You know, have you consciously studied his
style? Yes, that's why I brought
his
it
style.
Up.
Okay.
No, big time. And here's a little bit of backstory that's fun is when I was first learning to play guitar, I already was playing, like I was playing bass in Adrenaline OD, and I was starting to learn guitar. Like a lot of people, my first motivation to want to play guitar was that I wanted to, you know, get more into songwriting. And, you know, I had this idea that it helps to be able to play guitar instead of just bass to write songs.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, you listen to all those punk rock and rock, both kinds of music. I like both kinds of music, punk rock and rock.
Yes.
And you want to play those crunchy power chords, you know, like your friends. You want that satisfaction of that. So the big thing, like, so when I was in Adrenaline OD, you know, late 80s, and it was kind of like, that was the era of, you know, things like the Descendants and the Replacements, you know, either pop punk, like Descendants, or like Replacements and Husker Du, kind of going into more conventional songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was kind of going more with that trend than digging deeper into, like, the Cro-Mags or whatever was going on at the time. Everyone in AOD and really most of the bands I was in, everyone was always Cheap Trick fans. So when I started listening to Cheap Trick, you can hear the basic crunchiness, but then you can hear there's other stuff going on that is not from punk rock. And I went to learn that stuff. So
it's from the Beatles, isn't it? I mean,
it's from the Beatles is one place, but it's actually, that's the beauty. So I might've mentioned in a prior lesson, if you see the Big Star movie, one of the talking heads in the Big Star movie, one of the critics that went to see them with Bad Finger at the critics convention, a guy named Pete Tomlinson from Edison.
Okay.
And he he owed me money for a Hamer guitar that I sold him on time payments.
What kind of Hamer was it?
It was, I don't know what the model was, but it was cool looking. It was like Les Paulish, you know, a couple pickups.
Yeah.
Nothing too weird. But it's probably the most generic kind of Hamer, but it was, you know, a cool beefy sounding, you know.
Yeah.
But I had gotten a new Strat because I decided, which was not the great idea. But anyway, this guy was buying a guitar from me, and he was, you know, a middle-aged man, you know, in his 30s. He seemed very old at the time. I think he was 36. And he was working in a record store. He was like, okay. And I was working in a warehouse living at home. And he was working in a record store.
Living a dream.
On his own. Yeah. So the thing is I have disposable income, and I'm 19. And he's living hand-to-mouth, and he's grown up. So he owes me money for this guitar, and I was living at home, like, working a Teamster job. You know, like, I had no cash flow issues.
Mm-hmm.
And he was Jeff Sharofsky's roommate at the time, and Jeff's just like, yeah, I don't know how long it's going to take Pete to get you the money. Like, he's going to get you the money. I don't know. And I said, you know, I don't care about the money. I want guitar lessons from this guy. Such a great guitar teacher. And, such a great guitar player. He was not a guitar teacher at all. But I knew that he was one of these older guys that knew everything. Like, you could just tell the way he played, his feeling, his touch, his...
Was he in a band at this point?
He was playing in Matt Pinfield's band, Opium Vala. Before that, he'd play in a band called Rockin' Bricks. Have you ever heard of the Rockin' Bricks?
No.
They were contemporaries of the Smithereens. They were the Smithereens that didn't make it.
The Smithereens that got left behind?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. But it was the kind of thing where, like, the Smithereens had one great songwriter and a great band.
Yeah.
Rockin' Bricks had three really good songwriters. Like, in other words, they had, like, more guys that sang and wrote, but they didn't have the kind of the vision of maybe... But they were kind of neck and neck Smithereens kind of band.
Okay.
Like generation before hardcore, a little older.
So he's pressed for money and he agrees to give you some guitar lessons.
Well, he owes me money. So yeah, he owes me money for a guitar. And I just said, like, I'll tell you what, I don't even care about the money. Just let's just do guitar lessons. He's like, all right, I never give guitar lessons, but I'll do it. So what I wanted to know, my I had a list of things that I was trying to get into that I didn't know how to do. And Major, one of the most number ones that I knew he knew about was Cheap Trick. Was like, what are the secrets? And he really told me. He taught me all the secrets of Cheap Trick. And they remain with me to this day. I know all the secrets of Cheap Trick and what it's based on.
That's great, because yeah. I was going to suggest, you know, like, just to make this a little bit different than other times we've sat down. And by the way, I should probably introduce what's happening here, because I haven't yet. This is an aerial view, podiatry cast, podcast, whatever you want to call it. It's a marathon edition. So please, if you haven't done so yet, go and make a pledge at aerialview.me. You'll see a place at the top of the page where you can make a pledge to this particular show. Go to wfmu.org and make a pledge. I would give you the phone number, but I don't remember it offhand for making a pledge. And what's the point anyway, right? Because you're listening to this podcast.
Just, what are you look at the internet.
Go on the internet and do it.
Find
and,
what FMU...
WFMU.org, and then there's an even longer one if you want to pledge directly to the show. But the best way to do it is go to aerialview.me to the playlist page, and you'll see a box at the top where you can click on that box and make a pledge. And this year, for $75 or more pledge to this program, I have a very special fifth edition flip-top lighter in chrome with a Chris T design by the artist Robert Piersanti, and you could see it there on my playlist page as well, or if you get the newsletter, I'm sure you've seen it already. That's for a pledge of $75 or more. So please pledge to this program now. And for that amount of money as well, you will get all of the new swag that WFMU has out this year, including the new t-shirt and the new bumper sticker and all the other new stuff. You can also see at WFMU.org. But for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be asking you to do that, and I'll be asking you to do that in the newsletter as well. And it looks like this may be my last year for asking you for this, because I still have intentions of wrapping this thing up by July. So when you make your pledge, you're not only pledging for this year, but for the 30 years that I've spent down at WFMU, and I would really appreciate your help, and the station would appreciate your help. Thank you for letting me get that out of the way, Keith Hartel, who, of course, has been here five times before. If my memory serves, this is our sixth sit-down, if I'm counting correctly, guitar lesson. Keith teaches at the Guitar Bar in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Yes.
And he's also reachable on his Facebook page.
Yes, I can do Skype, Keith Hartel, H-A-R-T-E-L, K-E-I-T-H, H-A-R-T-E-L, is how you find me on Facebook, and you can message me, and we can Skype. Or you can go to Guitar Bar in Hoboken on First Street or call him up.
Right. And to recap, I've known Keith since, what would you say?
The late 80s?
I know we've talked about this before, but let's recap.
I think I register you faster than you register me. I can tell you the first time I ever saw you in flesh, in human flesh, Maxwell's, probably 86, Articles of Faith. First time I ever went to Maxwell's, I went with Decolator and Andy Scovrin, and maybe Harpo. But we went to see Articles of Faith at Maxwell's, and you were there. Unless it was the time that we went to see Thunders, but I think it was Articles of Faith. I think it was the first time. And you were like a celebrity, because you were from the Nihilistics. And we were from New Jersey. And like, you know, we're going into Hoboken, because, you know, coming into Hoboken from New Brunswick, and like, who knows what kind of fancy people you see.
Yeah, we're going to meet like, city people.
And you were walking, you were smoking a cigar, wearing a hat.
Wow.
And they're like, yeah, and you reconnected with Andy and Paul, and that's when we first met. But I think we got to know each other better when I was working for Skip, and we used to meet up at the guitar shows a bit.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And then subsequently, there's all kinds of history in there. Keith was in the band that played at my wedding, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah.
I just saw Marie Javens out in Los Angeles, by the way.
You saw who?
Remember that name. Marie Javens used to be a roommate of Otis Ball's.
Oh, the two Maries.
The two Maries. She was one of the Maries.
I've heard there was two Maries.
Yeah. I dated the other Marie for a while, Marie Alice, and Marie Javens was her roommate, but... The long and short of it is there's a lot of water under this bridge. We've known each other a long fucking time. I love that I can say fucking still on this show.
Podcast, yeah, freedom.
So let's flash forward again to what we're, where we are. We're down in my basement. We've got a couple of amps. Keith is playing through the circa 1971, 72 plush amp with the 100-watt head and the two 15-inch bottom. And I've got my circa 1972 orange amp with the 212 Celestians. And we're both going pretty raw today. I've got the MXR Distortion Plus. Keith has the Soviet era, Sovtek era, Big Muff.
Cold War Big Muff.
Keith is playing a 2009 SG Classic with P90 pickups. And I have my 1968 Les Paul with the three Seymour Duncans.
And I love it.
Yes.
Loving it.
I still like the, that's just a little too loud.
Yeah, it's low, and it sounds good.
So we're going to focus, I think, today on Rick Nielsen, because the past shows have had a little hint of ADD. We obviously cover a lot of ground because Rick Nielsen is going to be influenced by a bunch of people. But I thought an interesting way to approach this particular edition of the sit-downs with Keith is to try to learn an actual song. So, like, if we picked a Cheap Trick song to learn, do you have one memorized? Do you have one?
Do I have one memorized?
How
can I answer that question?
What a stupid question.
Oh, my word. My question to you would be, do you have any that come to your mind that you're curious about, that you have questions about?
I hate to sound cliched.
Yeah.
But I always thought Surrender was one of the most perfect songs ever written.
There you go. Perfect song
and
to start with.
I would just surrender to Surrender. I mean, fuck it.
There's a lot to learn there. There's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
A lot to learn.
How many different techniques is going on in this one song, would you say? I mean, beyond just knowing how to form a chord and
how many different techniques?
Strum. I mean, is there a lot of rock and roll technique in this song? Or what
I'm going to say the song has zero techniques. No, but here's what it is, though. Here, and this is a theme of Cheap Trick in general. The thing that makes Rick Nielsen really a...
I moved this because I didn't know if it was in your eyes.
No, yeah, that's nice. The thing that's so groovy about Rick Nielsen is that there is a thing that Cheap Trick represents that no one else exactly ever got, and that's why they're Cheap Trick. People have this word, and I deplore this term. I've been guilty of it. I've participated in people that dabbled in it. But, like, you know, if someone says power pop, I got to run the other way, man. It's going to be corny. It's going to be hokey. It's going to be amateurish, rinky-dink. I'm using all those words. Power pop has very bad connotations.
Even if, like, the first band that comes to mind when you say power pop is the Raspberries, for instance.
Who are awesome. Raspberries are godlike awesome.
So none of that applies? Because when I hear power pop...
No, the Raspberries weren't trying to be power pop. They were just making a great band.
Okay.
Now, when later generations in the 80s and 90s look back on power pop, they talk about the Raspberries.
Right.
So
you're saying... posthumously they got labeled power pop.
Every single band of every genre, every good band ever came out before whatever genre they're supposed to be from.
I see your point there.
But with Cheap
Trick, God, we're about to have a conversation about vinyl too at some point.
Something vinyl, the show. I've
the show
it.
Vinyl.
I
all right, fuck it. Well, then we can't have a conversation about it. All right, but so you don't consider, what would you consider Cheap Trick if you were forced to label them? If someone said to you, would you say rock and roll?
I would have to give them begrudgingly power pop. But rock and roll is the right answer. Rock and roll is the real right answer. The thing is, if you take a lineage, the actual guy that I think gets credit for inventing the term power pop, using it first, was Pete Townsend.
Okay.
When The Who, pre-Tommy The Who, you know, they're intellectualizing, they're 60s-izing, you know, everything's getting more grand, more conceptual. And power pop, I think, was a smart thing that Pete Townsend thought of because they were pop like the Stones and the Kinks and the Beatles, but they were heavier because of the band they had.
Yes.
But, so, there's a thing that happens if you follow The Who. Like, The Who had a power thing going before the Hendrix, Zeppelin, Cream came out.
Mm.
But they were, before Hendrix, Zeppelin, Cream, The Who was already louder than everyone else. Once the power trio wave started, then The Who got even heavier. Now, if you listen to The Who...
Like Live at Leeds?
Exactly. Yeah. Live at Leeds. My contention, Live at Leeds, every rhythm guitar sound AC/DC ever made is on Live at Leeds somewhere.
Really?
Like, everything that AC... Like, Live at Leeds has so much of what became the vocabulary of just rock or hard rock, heavy rock. It's every, you know, all the Zeppelin, all the AC/DC.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind
and
of
that
like...
And that was that guitar, pretty much.
Like that, those kind of riffs that right, you associate right, with right. an AC/DC or a Zeppelin. It's all over Live at Leeds, and it is, you know, the SG, the amplification. So now so if you look at what happened after The Who and Zeppelin, now you'd have something like AC/DC that's kind of following more in a Who Zeppelin. Then if you look at something like Raspberries, you get this kind of like Beatles Who. And Cheap Trick, a little bit further down in the 70s, and a little bit when punk rock was first starting to think about coming out, like Cheap Trick had this way of the songwriting was informed by the Beatles, but also the Kinks, and you know, the Move being the deep cut favorite Cheap Trick band.
Yeah.
But he handled the guitar, like there's a basic way of how Townsend handles a guitar, an electric guitar. Like it's almost like Townsend sets a law for this is what you do with an electric guitar.
Right.
And Jimmy Page does it, and every person that played hard rock ever after did some variation of it. So Rick Nielsen is kind of a perfect student of Pete Townsend, and then he's also a student of all the Beatles songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the tricks about the post-Live at Leeds, post-distortion, post-hard rock thing is that you don't play that many notes at once, because the distortion means that if you try to clog too much, you know, content into your chord, the overdrive, the harmonics of the overdrive make noise. So Rick Nielsen is kind of an expert at doing a minimal, like, hard rock thing and then putting all kinds of smart stuff. So on the one hand, you hear the heaviosity and drive of The Who.
Yeah.
And then you hear the prettiness and the smartness of the Beatles. And then things like, you know, the Kinks and the Move. AC/DC was an influence on them as well. It all falls in there, too.
I have to, I know this show is full of digressions, but I also, because I have that Amazon membership, I went back into the Kinks back catalog and started really listening to a lot of their stuff recently, and there was a lot there I hadn't heard before. I'm ashamed to admit it, but man, what a great band. What a great, great band.
They're the most underrated band that everyone loves.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I would agree with that.
Well, they're the band that everyone loves what they know, but then if they go digging, it's like, whoa, I have no idea. There's so much.
I mean, very impressive. Just really impressive.
Yeah. And the Kinks, I mean, the Kinks, getting back to this again, I mean, when you try to go, like, who's ground zero for inventing, like, metal or rock, it's this. That's really, to me, I mean, everyone, you might say Rumble by Link Wray.
Mm.
That's the first power chord song. That's the first hard rock riff song. That's it. That's where it
that's
starts.
It. That's the one.
That's ground zero. That's
which is why Van Halen chose to resurrect it,
and,
right?
And when Van Halen did it, they metaled up by going... You know, they modernized it instead of... And then I forgot if there was another thing I was going to throw in, but we'll put a pin in it.
Okay.
So back to Rick.
Back to Rick Nielsen.
Now, okay, Surrender. So here's the thing that's great about Surrender is, like much of Cheap Trick, it has the perfect blend of bonehead stupid. I have a loud electric guitar. I can do easy rock things with no effort. And then on the other side, it's very sophisticatedly organized and put together. So your first thing that you got is this.
What the hell is that? Are you literally just doing...
Yeah. Now, here's the thing with that. That is a Live at Leeds thing. Because on Live at Leeds, like, Townsend would be like, yo... You know what I mean? Like... That's a Townsend thing. The only difference is that Rick Nielsen does it on frets.
Yeah.
But the whole, like that the noise of this... Resolving into, that is Live at Leeds. That's Live at Leeds 101. And what... So what Rick does in the song is he starts it at the first fret. Yeah. That's right. Then you do it again. Yeah. And then if you want to be hardcore about it, when you do this, give it the full, like really, yo, live it up. Yo. Yeah. Like, it's the chaos and then it's revolution. So here's what he does now, when it after the second time. Now, to start the song, you got... So what he does is, you have a basic like modulation, the trick of modulation.
Yeah.
So when you're hearing that intro, it's going a classic intro.
Yeah.
Yeah, he goes up one half step. So after he's done this twice, and then you start the song, you're supposed to have the monotone. Yeah. Now, here's what everyone gets wrong.
Yeah.
Is that everyone wants to go. Oh, no, that's not the part that people get. This part is what you think it is. This part is just... Yeah. All right, so that's simple, right? So you got... Mom told me, yes, she told me. Now, when you do that, make sure that you move your finger so you get this... Yeah, that's one of those big live at Leeds noises. Like, basically, like this sound, like the E chord where you're only playing the bottom two notes of the... That's very live at Leeds and then adapted by AC/DC a lot. See, when you're doing that, make sure that you really hear that... Yeah, the open E strings are important. Yeah. So your progression is... Told me, stay away, you'll never know what you get. Okay, then, just the other day I heard. The same chord's backwards, right?
Oh, so
you're going to do an E. That's sharp. Some ain't those. When you go from that E to F, just make sure that you move that finger onto the low E string.
Oh, so it's
Yeah. So you go from this.
You're doing.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. The important thing is when think of the E as a power chord slid down. That's it. So to the point we're at in the song now, in the verse, you go this way. You go B, F sharp, E, B. Do that twice. And then for the second half of the verse. Da, 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 da. Yeah. Okay. Now the money part, and this is the part that if you watch cover bands... Next time you see a cover band playing Surrender, try to go and expect to see someone play this part wrong we're about to play.
All right, cool.
So the mommy's all right, daddy's all right. This is a great example of smarts and dumbness at the same time. So mommy's all right is that same B. So now when you're playing this, play the B chord. So it's this one, this one, this one. And then when you go from this, now you hear this chord? Now, see, now what you want to do, here's what you're trying to do. I recommend when you play this chord, I recommend using those three fingers because it makes it easier to switch to the other stuff. Yeah, now remember you're leaving out the E string there, so you just want the... Yeah. So you go. The other two fingers stay. See, when you play this one. Now, keep your third finger and pinky down when you move to this.
I can't make my finger go there.
Let your first finger go. Yeah. No, it has to go to the fourth fret of the low E string.
Fourth fret?
Middle finger.
Middle finger.
Fourth fret, low E.
Fourth fret, low
yeah,
E.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. And then this. Yeah, again, yeah. And then. Yeah. So basically the way that's working is that with the chords, I mean, you can think of it as this. You have this. These two notes stay the same. These are like drones. But what happens is when you play this, that's a B power chord. When you play this, when you switch the bass to a G sharp, G sharp minor 7. And then when you change to this, B with F sharp in the bass. So what you hear, when you hear them in a row, even though that's simple to play, like it only uses three notes and you can use distortion,
yeah,
you're actually hearing like, you know, a two-parted motion. Because the bass is changing, but the treble part's staying. So you get B, G sharp minor 7, B with F sharp in the bass, then regular E. And I should really try to get this a little better in tune so I can...
Tuning up. By the way, does he use any weird tunings? Or I mean, I know he's got a ton of different guitars.
No, he doesn't use any weird tunings. And no, I don't get that. But so the big point here is, and this is like, it's a perfect example of the genius of Rick Nielsen. Is because what you have is when you start in this B chord, you have these three notes. Right? That's a B power chord. So you notice now the wrong way that people play it, when people play it wrong, this is what it sounds like wrong. So I'll play it for you wrong. You've heard it before. It sounds like this. Wrong sounds like this. Now, for wrong, that's not too fucked up, right?
Right.
Now, right, what you want to listen to is the drone of the top two notes against the bass. That's what makes it sound like a man who is worthy of having fucking listened to the Beatles, having listened to The Who, understanding music, even though you don't have to play anything hard to show that you know how to write. And what he's doing is just keeping these two strings droned. If you listen to the contrast, it's a different world. I mean, tension, release. Yeah, so you're starting on the B power chord. One is get your third finger and pinky parked, and then just keep them parked.
Oh, right here. Okay.
Yeah, as if you're trying to save the parking space. As if they're coned off, blocked off. Saving the parking space.
All right. Right here.
Yeah. Yeah, now the third finger and pinky just stay, no matter what. Yeah, so you go from that.
Am I playing the top E when I play that? Or?
Yeah, you're playing low E. I mean, you're only playing the three strings that your fingers are on. So when I move my finger from here, the second finger is going to muffle the A string. So after this, it's the notes on the E string and the two D. So it's like.
All right.
Use your middle for that. Yeah. Yep, and then just move down to the second fret with the first finger.
And you're muffling with your first finger? Or
second finger, and it'll take no effort. It'll muffle it whether you want it to or not. Yeah, that's it.
And then what's the last chord? And your finger. So the finger is.
Second fret.
Second fret?
Yep. Of the low E. And still muffling the A. And then you have. Yeah. Now, and then by the time you get to that E, that should sound like resolution because you've been hearing these weird chords before. So when you hear it, normal, dissonant, dissonant, normal. Yeah. And again, I recommend try to get used to using first finger for that because it's just less work and it gives you that. Yeah, so you're going from.
All right, so from the beginning, it's
B, G sharp.
On the B, am I playing the low E?
Nope.
Okay.
See, I would use the second finger there because it'll reach it
easier.
Oh,
I keep doing the wrong thing. You're right. Okay, so.
Second fret. Second fret, yeah. Now, when you go to that E, let those other two fingers go so you get a nice clean.
I got to tune up myself. Right.
Well, guitars can never be in tune. That's the law of guitars.
If I had one of those self-tuning robot guitars.
Self-tuning was a Google? Self-tuning robot guitar?
The one that Gibson came out with a few years ago? You know, the robot guitar?
How about the robot guitar?
Yeah, it's got the machine heads that constantly check to see what the tension should be, and then if it's off, they tune up for you. They keep your guitar in constant tune. Plus, you can do all these alternate tunings at the push of a button. This is all Jimmy Page's fault.
Wow, that sounds. I don't know. It's like one of. That sounds to me like the kind of thing that would be so convenient, but I couldn't imagine being comfortable with a guitar that was never out of tune. How would I be able to know?
I think most people hate it, and they. I mean, at one point, I think last year, they had it like where you couldn't get the guitar without it. And so many people were like, this sucks, that they re-examined that whole idea. Wow. So. Let me see how much I've actually absorbed.
Okay.
So again, these two fingers are parked here on the fourth fret.
That's right.
The D and G strings.
That's right.
Okay. And then this finger, to begin with, is down here.
Yes.
On second fret.
Yes.
Low E.
Yep.
Then I'm moving the second finger here.
Well, where are you starting from?
Wasn't I starting from there?
Okay, well, let's do this.
Wait a minute. No, I'm starting from here.
Yeah, that's pretty sharp. Okay.
Yeah, so it's just a matter of memorizing that.
Yeah. Okay, now check out the rhythm. The rhythm when he's doing the first three chords is very big. And then he bears down the E, so it ends up sounding kind of like this, like a. You hear the contrast.
Yeah. And is that the only two parts of the song, or is there more?
It's kind of the only two parts. Here's the difference. Is remember we started here, and then we moved up to play the song. So then, after verse one and verse two, he does the intro the same, but starts at the second fret and doesn't modulate. So then it becomes. Now, then he plays the same thing.
Yeah.
Then what happens in the last verse is they modulate again, so it starts here. And whatever happened to all this is. The last verse is modulated a half step higher. That's the only difference.
Wow.
But, I mean, those
are
the only parts.
In this song? Is there
no solo, no guitar solo. Three verses, and what makes it work, this is one of these genius of songwriters thing, like songwriters, there's the diabolical songwriting. Like there's things that people put in songs that you hear. You're like, oh, that's cool. Mm. But then there's the diabolical stuff that you don't hear, but it keeps you interested. So, in the case of this song, he starts down there and then modulates a half step to play the first two verses. But then he modulates again to play the third verse. So there's whatever thing is built into your psychology, like you hear, like intellectually, you hear no change, but the key changes twice in the song. So when the key changes in that last third verse, you hear a this is going somewhere that registers things are happening. But no, there's no guitar solo or bridge or other parts. There's just a modulation at the beginning and a modulation before the last chorus is all that's in there.
What a genius! Oh my God,
that is brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah, because you know it's building. It's a song that keeps building. I like
yes,
that. Yeah.
and then there's minimalism.
Yeah.
Like in other words, because he uses the tools to keep it building, keep your attention, make a pop song work, and there's zero fat. There's not one ingredient superfluous to making the song more interesting.
It is a kind of a very Beatles type of move too, that idea of that half step
modulation. Oh yeah.
Wow. Well, let's try playing it. And you know, all the way through, and I'm gonna fuck it up many, many times, I'm sure. But it might be interesting.
Okay, so we start here. We have to start with Now modulate. Mama told me yes. Oh, sorry, told me I need girlfriend. The other told me stay away, so never know what to do. That's us. Mama says your father's right, he didn't give it up all this. Before he married, Mama served in the watch in the pillow. Now I have heard the watch recruited old mates for the war. My mama isn't one of those, I know. ba 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 da ba 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 ba. Okay, half step up modulation, there we go. What have happened to all these
Is that the live version? Or?
Yeah, live version.
I was hanging in there. I was doing okay.
You were hanging there. You're doing very well.
It's Wow. That is, like, once you unlock it, there's not a lot there, but it's
exactly
really the way it's employed.
When you
it's
say
all
the,
about how it's
the way
employed.
It's employed, too, like, not a lot there. Yeah. Like, you take that not a lot there and then really commit to fucking expressing that amount. Like, because that's what he does. I mean, a thing like this, like, to me, like a lot of the money there, and it, he uses it in other places. But, like, you take this thing, like, you know, a three note, like a power chord, generic. Then you change to this, sophisto.
This has got a lot of Badfinger going on in it, too. I mean, it, you know, when you were playing that just now, I was thinking, whatever, however that
Oh,
goes.
You want to start getting into that?
Well,
you that? Know, want to open up that can of worms? I know
just
about
was
that.
I was just put in mind of that when you played that.
Well, Badfinger was the original. I mean, again, we...
No matter. That's how it starts out. No matter.
We've established that we feel that Pete Townsend was probably the first guy that ever said power pop.
Right.
Badfinger was the first band that sounded like the Beatles, but kind of more rock.
Yeah.
And No Matter What is just a great song. It's just, yeah, you know, classic, worthy. But since we were talking about Cheap Trick, was there any other... Because my thing was, when I went, you know, talking about going to that guy, Pete, who I thought had secrets, you know, because I played in the hardcore bands, and I felt that Cheap Trick had secrets I wasn't aware of, and I was like, I want to know the secrets. And he taught me all the secrets.
Yeah.
So was there? Are there any other Cheap Trick songs that you have any questions about?
Well, you know, like, I don't know a lot of them by name. I know the ones that would have been hits, like I Want You to Want Me and Surrender and, you know, Dream Police.
Well, let's go.
And, you know, not a hell of a lot more. I would actually have to go and look at the track listings to tell you.
No, but I, well, there's a couple
perhaps
things.
I should be ashamed.
I don't know.
Cheap Trick is a band. I love Cheap Trick, but like definitely there's not that many bands that I feel that there's people that they like them too much.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the power pop thing, because I mean power pop. I mean, I love the Beatles and I love the Who and I love Cheap Trick and I hate power pop. Like if someone starts saying power pop, it's going to be bad. It's going
to
be fucking.
You get like you want to punch somebody.
I have to say, yeah. I mean, keeping in mind, I used to be in a band called True Love that was pasted with the power pop tag as hard as any band ever did. So when I say that I hate power pop, it's very self-hating. It's very self-abusing. But here is what I'm talking about, though, is with like a Cheap Trick. Like it's power pop, it's just like it's just rock, but it just happens to have catchy tunes and melodies. But when you said like I should be ashamed, it's like no, people should be ashamed for liking Cheap Trick too much. The reason I asked though is because I remember when I was first learning this stuff, it was that thing where I felt like I had a good grip on punk rock and then guitar basics. And then it sounded like Rick Nielsen had some hipness, which I was right about. And it really is, there's a mixture of, when you're playing distorted electric hard rock guitar, you don't need to hold down and press and play as many notes to get a vibe going. But, you know, your note choice, selection, choices, that's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Nielsen has that perfect thing between like kind of a lazy-ish way of playing electric guitar that relies on the natural strengths of things electric guitar does by itself,
mm-hmm.
and then making little choices that are the differences that make you be like, oh, this guy knows songs, this guy knows the Beatles. So for me, there was always some little like gizmos in there. I Want You to Want Me is kind of an interesting song because it's got a lot of... It's got a lot of descending stuff because it's like so basically I Want You to Want Me is like you have this. Say if you're playing, can you play like a muffly A, and that's your I Want You to Want Me chord? Yeah. I want you to want me. Now, if we're even going to take this as a little micro example of the little specialness of the Cheap Trick, that tension note, that little note, it adds so much tension, but the song has so much power pop fun that it doesn't sound dissonant, but like basically, you know, I want you to want me. Then you're playing an F sharp minor. I need me. And then the E bass. And then the D, I love you. Yeah. And then you end up back at the A. So what he's doing is descending, like between every chords, because the chords are descending from each other. So you have playing A, then playing F sharp minor, then play a D, and then play an A. So that's your basic chords. And then the way that the interest comes is that he spends this time in the tension between the chords with the descending bass note. So if you're going from A, and you're going to end up on F sharp minor. But the way that he gets to it, F sharp minor, third and fourth finger should be on the A and D strings. Move them all up.
A and D?
Yeah. Other way. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So he's going from this chord to this chord. But he has a transitional chord, so you get this. I want you to want me. I need you to need me. I want you to love me. Yeah. So what you get is that after every chord, there's a suspense transitional chord, and the little difference the way they handle it is they sit on the transition. Like if you're listening to a if Mark Bolan wrote "I Want You to Want Me," it would sound like this. If Mark Bolan, mm-hmm. T-Rex, if it was a T-Rex song, it would sound like this. It'd be like he'd be like, "I want you to want me." You know what I mean? Like, the transitions would be fast.
Right.
In this song, the transitions, he hammers on them and builds the tension. So you get this. Yeah. Yeah. It starts over again. I want you, want me. I need you, need you. So basically, the thing that I'm kind of showing there is like if you see that it's kind of a four basic chords,
yes.
But those transitional moments build all this tension that makes it sound like a really interesting, complex verse.
Yeah.
But all he's doing is kind of just chilling out on this space that usually people would blow through.
Right. That's interesting. I mean, the difference between him and the way Mark Bolan would have done it.
Yeah.
It illustrates what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, Mark Bolan, I mean, that's basically, Mark Bolan is the most basic guy. I mean, as far as one of my favorite guys, but like Mark Bolan is as basic.
Oh, yeah.
No trickery.
I really love his what he did too, because it is the end. It's the same thing we're talking about, which is to take some very simple building blocks and make, you know, the parts equal more. The sum of the parts are more than the whole. Or how does that go?
Yeah,
the whole equals more than the sum of the parts.
Yeah,
that's what I meant to say.
Yeah, and a lot of the Bolan thing. Besides, you know, the bottom line of writing songs is you have to have a catchy toe tapper that can stick in people's heads.
Oh, yeah.
That's the number one. And then the other thing is like, you know, I'm Mark Bolan, you know, turn of the 70s, you know, he started T-Rexing in the 70s, but he was already fucking with Les Paul in the late 60s.
Yeah.
But basically, the late 60s is when the Les Paul, like that fat Les Paul Marshall sound was invented. Mark Bolan was one of the right after Zeppelin and The Who.
Right.
Mark Bolan and Mick Ronson, they were some of the first guys in the 70s just being like, yeah, anyone could play this, but listen to me understanding what a Les Paul sounds like when I play it and how it sounds so much better. Even though, you know, Mark Bolan didn't do anything that anyone couldn't do, but it just everything sounded fantastic and like no one else.
Yeah. Plus, he was great at writing hooks.
He was all hooks. He was a human hook. Human hook.
He was a human hook machine. You know?
Absolutely.
So let's try this one more time. And then I think we're running out of time, unfortunately, just because we got started late.
Yes, yes. I had to work. I can't believe they made me work. I hate when they make me work.
Let's digress for a minute because, I mean, yeah. I love that, you know, we unlock the secrets of surrender, and I want you to want me, even though we didn't do the whole song, obviously, because he's got, you know, he's got other things he does in there where, you know, I if I remember correctly, there is a solo in that song. Is it there somewhere?
Yeah. It's like a...
Yeah.
What is it? And this got some kind of like... I can't remember what he's. He's got some of that shit in there, yeah. Like he's like
very country-fied.
Right.
I want to say James Burton. You know, it's very it's very like a country lick.
Yo, yeah, Steve Cropper. These things are the Steve Cropper. These ones, Steve Cropper. Yeah, he used to be, because he's got that, yeah, that.
We got to wrap up. Thanks again to Keith Hartel for coming by.
Oh,
don't disconnect us yet. I'm going to say goodbye.
So, okay.